Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view. We'd
all right, if it sounds like we're going backwards, we are. 2021 is almost history, and we're looking back at some of the top stories of the year.
Right now, I am sheltered in place in my office because we have protesters who have stormed the Capitol.
Now, if someone dials 911 in Clam Lake, he says there's no guarantee anyone will answer.
This year, the can of worms came down. We've seen I-35 South rerouted a bit.
Plus, we'll revisit some of our favorite performers, including those who made it back to the stage and some who found stages elsewhere. All that after this. Everyone is searching.
News and issues from a superior point of view. We'd
all right, if it sounds like we're going backwards, we are. 2021 is almost history, and we're looking back at some of the top stories of the year.
Right now, I am sheltered in place in my office because we have protesters who have stormed the Capitol.
Now, if someone dials 911 in Clam Lake, he says there's no guarantee anyone will answer.
We're on our own.
Plus, we'll revisit some of our favorite performers, including those who made it back to the stage and some who found stages elsewhere.
I can tell you that if you try, it will survive. Everyone is searching, searching. Something new. When you search, it will feel like a merry-go-round. I'm on my way now, come around.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. 2021 is, well, not quite over. We still have two more weeks on the calendar, and anything can happen in the world and the region in an instant, as we saw at the beginning of this year. But this is our last show for the year. For the next 2 weeks in our normal time slot, we'll join WPR's network programming for Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. And I'll be back with you to start the year fresh on January 7th. So that makes this our year in review show. And to guide us through the news headlines of 2021 is our regular team of ace news hounds. Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
And Rick Lovers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
So I've asked each of you to name your top stories of the year, and I'll qualify that by defining top stories as those you found most memorable. Let's start with yours, Danny. You've got one that's kind of unbelievable for some local residents trying to dial 911 and expecting a response. Let's take a listen to this report you filed in February.
What if you call 911 and no one comes? That's a problem facing several towns in northern Wisconsin after they lost their ambulance service provider at the beginning of this year. Towns are mandated to provide emergency services unless they're offered elsewhere. But as Danielle Kading reports, rural communities are struggling to provide that service due to a lack of volunteers, long distances, and inadequate financing.
Bud Rubeck never saw him coming. He and his wife Julie had gone over to a neighbor's house late one night in Clam Lake to try to smooth things over between a fighting couple. Instead, the man blindsided him, punching Rubeck on the left side of his head. He fell and hit the ground hard.
When the ambulance service got here, had we not had critical care paramedics, I would have been dead.
Great Divide Ambulance Service and Cable was there to respond when his life was on the line. Paramedics took him to Cable, where they were met by a helicopter. He was flown to a hospital in Duluth, where he spent several days on life support. He left after a month and had to learn to walk all over again. But now, if someone dials 911 in Clam Lake, he says there's no guarantee anyone will answer.
We're on our own.
Clam Lake recently lost its ambulance service after Great Divide decided not to renew contracts with six towns in Ashland County. Some have found service, but several others have not. Great Divide's Rob Poles says the ambulance service struggled with overtime costs and other mounting expenses, but the biggest issue was staffing.
And in a pandemic situation, there aren't people lining up to be first responders right now.
the town of Gordon is one of the places left in the lurch. Chairman Doug Thorpe asked every surrounding agency if they would contract to respond, but they all pointed to a lack of staff or the distance. It could take some up to 45 minutes to respond one way.
That just leaves us kind of in the middle of the woods with no ambulance service.
While services like Great Divide pay staff, more than 90% of Wisconsin fire departments rely on volunteers like Mellon Fire and Rescue. The fire and ambulance outfit is nearby towns that lost service. But Fire Chief Tony Huber says they may not be able to answer every call because they have a small staff of just under a dozen volunteers.
The younger generation does not want to do this stuff. You look up here in northern Wisconsin, there's not a lot of younger people sticking around, for one thing.
Like many rural areas, northern Wisconsin has a shrinking and aging population that makes it difficult to find volunteers. Gordon and other towns reached out to the Ashland Fire Department last fall. Ashland has the closest service with a paid staff.
Most of them are gone right now. We have had a terribly busy day today.
That's Fire Chief David Wegener. On the day we meet up, he says they had 5 calls in about 20 minutes.
Dispatch for 2.
One ambulance was just returning from transferring a patient to the hospital. Wegener says they have to weigh their call volume and staffing when they get requests to provide service. He says they're now responding to one nearby town that lost service, but that doesn't make sense for communities farther away.
And that was from Danny's report in February about the crises facing 911 services for several communities in our area. Danny, you mentioned there was some legislative action addressing it.
Yeah, lawmakers have introduced several bills to try to make it easier to get people in these places interested in volunteering by reducing testing requirements or certification requirements. But it's an ongoing issue that many believe is unsustainable without making some dramatic changes the way it's currently set up.
Right. And speaking of 911 and first responders, you also had a story about the declining number of people wanting to be police officers.
Yeah, it's getting tougher to find and keep people in law enforcement right now. We've all seen stories nationwide about officers retiring in droves. And in 2020, Superior Police Chief Mick Alexander said that he received less than half the applications he normally gets. In his first few years after he became chief, he had about 48, and usually there's more than double that. But last year's national reckoning over racial justice and calls for police reform have really added to agency struggles, not just in Superior, but statewide. You know, the pandemic, rising violence, and intense scrutiny of police have made it more challenging to attract and keep officers. There was a national survey that came out this year of nearly 200 police departments by the Police Executive Research Forum that found hiring dropped by 5%, while retirements rose 45%. And resignations also climbed to almost 20% from April of last year to this spring. And so it's not easy to get a real good picture of how many officers have left in Wisconsin. Some federal data indicates that local police and sheriff's agencies had just over 10,000 officers through May of last year, which is a decline of nearly 7% from the previous year. So, you know, all of the struggles that we've seen with racial justice and also the COVID-19 pandemic have just added to the difficulties that these agencies are having with finding and keeping staff.
Well, how about we talk about the weather, or more specifically, the climate and flooding in the area?
Yeah, everyone remembers the severe storms that dropped up to 10 inches of rain or more in some places in just 24 hours across northern Wisconsin in July of 2016. That caused flooding that claimed several lives and caused tens of millions of dollars damage to homes, businesses, and roads. And Saxon Harbor in Iron County was one of the areas that was hardest hit by floodwaters. It destroyed its marina and campground there. And it also claimed the life of Mitch Koski. He was a volunteer firefighter and a former county board member. Over this past summer, Iron County state and federal officials celebrated changes that were made to the harbor, which they hope will make it more resilient to climate change. Scientists have found that we're seeing increasing frequency and intensity of rains that raise the risk of flooding that can lead to injuries and deaths. In the last decade, northern Wisconsin has seen 3 of these floods that are only supposed to occur once every 500 to 1,000 years. And so, you know, they got together at Saxon Harbor this past summer to look at some of the changes that have been made, which include moving the campground out of the floodplain, installing riprap, and building a bigger bridge down there over the Urancho Creek. And in the past, the Federal Emergency Management Agency has only allowed communities to rebuild things the way they were. But that is changing now. President Joe Biden's administration has proposed a new program that would help communities make changes so that their roads and infrastructure would be more resilient. And also, we saw the passage of the infrastructure bill this fall, and that would also bring resources to address some of the issues that we're seeing right now with climate change.
All right. And lastly, the year end is a time to remember those we've lost.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the stories that really stayed with me that I did earlier this year was the loss of Ad River tribal elder Joe Rose, who died in February at the age of 85 from complications of contracting COVID-19.
And here's a bit from your report in March.
Bad River Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins says Joe was an encyclopedia of knowledge about the history of the Anishinaabe people and their cultural practices. He taught people to live in a way that would benefit those for seven generations to come.
Joe was a compass point that always helped us remember our bearing. And from a community perspective, you know, all of our elders are real sacred because they give us those tangible ties to the past and help us remember where we came from.
Rose passed on his teachings to Bad River youth and through a Native American studies program that he led at Northland College in Ashland. That's where Mick Isham first met Joe as a student more than 30 years ago.
That guy saved my life, and I'll never forget it, because I swear I don't know where I'd be without him.
Isham, whose dad is Native and mom is white, remembers struggling with his identity. It was also around the time protesters gathered at boat landings to hurl insults and rocks at tribal spearfishers seeking to defend their federal treaty rights.
I couldn't figure out how they were not throwing punches and things like that. And Joel explained to me, basically with a European proverb, you catch more flies with, what is it, honey than vinegar or something like that. And when they go well, you go high.
Joe would defend those rights and the natural resources on which they relied throughout his life. During a contentious debate over iron mining, he and other tribal members traveled to the state capitol in 2012. He, along with drummers from Bad River, protested a Republican bill that weakened environmental standards and sought to pave the way for a more than $1 billion iron ore mine proposed upstream from the Bad River Reservation.
We can't put any price on the wild rice or any of those other resources that a hunter-gatherer society would use. So this mine is not going to happen. I don't plan on losing this one. Uh-huh.
People had many stories to share, and it was clear the impact that he had on so many lives, not just in Bad River, but in the surrounding community in northern Wisconsin and really across the country. And so I think he is sorely missed.
Absolutely. And thank you for remembering him. So, Rick, what were your top stories on the Minnesota side? And I'm betting that COVID-19 figured in there somewhere.
Well, you'd be right, Robin. COVID-19 dominated 2021. We've seen vaccines rolled out early in the year, but as we all know, variants popped up during the year, and so boosters have been recommended for folks as we close out this year and head into next year. But here at the end of the year, we're seeing a surge. You know, unfortunately, we've also seen a number of deaths locally. In St. Louis County alone, they've now hit 428 deaths since the start of the pandemic. And we're also seeing disruptions in the supply chain, many, many items that we can't find at our grocery stores or even video games and books, and local authors seeing their books not being able to hit the shelves at their regular time.
You know, we had on author Linda Lagarde Grover describing exactly that, books that just barely arrived in time for one of her readings. And we also had an explanation of why COVID-19 has created such a supply chain problem. We've had on University of Wisconsin-Superior Professor of Transportation and Logistics Richard Stewart many times, usually to talk about transportation. But this fall, we finally asked him to explain logistics, which is the whole science behind the supply chain issue. Here's his explanation.
Just a little historical background. Back in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, the concept of supply chain hadn't been coined yet. That wasn't until the 1990s. And the logistical concept we had was what we called a push-type system, where we manufactured goods realizing economies of scale by mass production, and we pushed this product out into the marketplace. And if the customer didn't buy it, we would offer coupons and sales, but all too frequently, we ended up with stuff going in the trash. We produced too much and a lot of waste in the system. Interestingly enough, we learned in the 80s from Toyota what we call a lean supply chain system. The whole purpose of it is rather than a push-type system, where you're pushing products into the market, you pull the markets based on demand of your customer, and you reduce waste in the logistical stream wherever possible, right down to worker steps, but certainly inventory. You don't carry any more inventory than you need to make the products that are presently demanded and that you forecast demand for. And you provide all the services, production, transportation, everything else, based on this lean concept. And this took off really in the late 70s, early 80s, because of very high interest rates. Our younger audience may not realize that back in 79, 80, 81, if you wanted to buy a house, you were paying 12 to 14% interest. Well, this also applied to inventory. So if you were doing mass production and you had lots of parts stored in warehouses, you borrowed money to buy them because you haven't sold the final product. This was an enormous hit to companies. So that's why they adopted lean logistics and embraced it up through the 90s. Supply chain is basically, logistics expanded to include finance and some other areas. But we now operate and have, since the mid-2000s, on a very lean system. It's wonderful for keeping costs down, but for a resilient logistical supply chain, it leaves you little room if you have major disruptions like we've been having.
And that was Richard Stewart, University of Wisconsin-Superior Professor of Transportation and Logistics, banging it through our heads once and for all that logistics, which you may call supply chain, is every bit as important as transportation. But transportation likewise is extremely important. And Rick, you've got a transportation story on your list, especially for anyone trying to drive between Superior and Duluth.
Yes, it is, Robin. Pretty much anywhere you go in Duluth or out of Duluth, you have to deal with the Twin Ports interchange construction, which really hit high gear this year. The can of worms came down. We've seen I-35 South rerouted a bit, so you can get through town, but you have to think a little bit before you leave your destination to make sure you have a good route in mind. Just try driving by Bentleyville right now around 5 o'clock on a weekday. It's a bit busy and crowded, so drivers are going to be learning a new definition of patience as this project continues into 2022.
So do I remember smoky skies last summer that were not the result of anything coming out of tailpipes on the can of worms?
Yes, you do. I think all of us remember those days this summer due to the wildfires that were raging in Minnesota and beyond, days where you'd come into Duluth and Twin Ports area and you get out of your car, and sometimes even before you leave your car and get that smell of the smoke and the fires. And we obviously had poor air quality for several days, and there were warnings from health officials during those times. I guess the other side of it is we did have some spectacular sunrises and sunsets. If folks were paying attention, just because of all the smoke in the atmosphere, it made the sun appear in a very spectacular way, both when it would rise and when it would set.
Right. And I recall that some of that smoke came from fires as far away as California and a little bit closer from Canada, but still quite a distance. Closer to home, some unfortunate news in Proctor.
Yes, the Proctor football team had an incident that happened early in its football season where caused school officials to basically cancel the rest of the season. Authorities were called into action to investigate an incident that happened between the football players there. And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of details yet, but there is an extreme amount of community interest in this story. With any news story, sometimes there are rumors that are running out there, and it's hard to know exactly where the truth is, and the news organizations are still trying to get to that, and of course the authorities are investigating as well. The Proctor Police Department ultimately handed the case over to St. Louis County, and they are currently investigating. But as of right now, there's no new word on what has been discovered or where they're at with this investigation. So it seems like this might also go into 2022 before there's a resolution there.
Well, I'm going to add a couple. One of the biggest stories, probably the biggest story in the country, if not the world, and reverberating in the region as well, was the insurrection at the Capitol on January 6th. So I've got a personal story on this. I was working on our year in review show that day for 2020 when I noticed my internet wasn't working. Then I looked and saw my cell phone was down. And I turned on my cable TV, and that was working, and that's how I found out the Capitol was being stormed. The rest you guys know. But I thought all these things were related. It was a total freak out. I thought, this is it. But, of course, it was just coincidence. Right in the thick of it, however, was U.S. Representative Mike Gallagher of Green Bay, who represents Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District. While sheltered in place in the Capitol as it was being stormed, he broadcast live via Twitter an appeal to then-President Trump to call it off. Let's take a listen.
Right now, I am sheltered in place in my office because we have protesters who have stormed the Capitol, clashing with Capitol Police, forcing their way into Statuary Hall. The Vice President of the United States was just rushed off the floor of the House by Secret Service. This is Banana Republic crap that we're watching happen right now. And the objectors over the last 2 days have told me there is no problem with just having a debate. We know we're not going to succeed, so we're just going to object. We're going to have a debate, we'll voice people's concerns, and then we won't actually overturn our entire system of representative government, so nothing bad will happen, there'll be no cost to this effort. This is the cost of this effort. This is the cost of countenancing an effort by Congress to overturn the election and telling thousands of people that there is a legitimate shot of overturning the election today, even though you know that is not true. We have got to stop this. Mr. President, you have got to stop this. You are the only person who can call this off. Call it off. The election is over. Call it off. This is bigger than you. It's bigger than any member of Congress. It is about the United States of America, which is more important than any politician. Call it off. It's over.
That was Congressman Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District webcasting via Twitter from the Capitol while under siege on January 6th. Representative Gallagher is a Republican from Green Bay, and ultimately, he did not vote to impeach President Trump for those actions, and the rest is political history that we all know very well. On a more cheerful note, though the pandemic continued, as Rick pointed out, we did have two back-to-normal events in the region, the American Berkey Binder and Grandma's Marathon, both of which were canceled for 2020, came back with in-person competition this year. And finally, I have a story that was particularly special to me. That was the story of the Greyhound bus that was acquired last spring by the Freedom Rides Museum in Montgomery, Alabama. The bus was the exact same model as the one that was firebombed in Alabama during the Freedom Ride of 1961. It was originally procured for the Greyhound Bus Museum in Hibbing for a Freedom Rides exhibit in our region. I was asked to help curate that, but those plans evaporated with the passing of Gene Nicolelli, the Greyhound Bus Museum's founder. But the bus eventually made its way to the museum in Montgomery, where I was honored to attend its dedication and board it one more time. And we're hoping you can come back for a visit. So, both of you, reserve your bus tickets now.
I will definitely have to do that.
All right. Well, we've been joined by Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
And Rick Lovers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
Coming up, the year in review in arts and entertainment after this. Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If 2020 was the year that arts went online, 2021 was the year that, well, we're not sure what it was. This time last year, the COVID-19 vaccinations had just come out, and we thought we'd all be putting the pandemic behind us, meaning that performers could start returning to the stages, and some did, kinda. But then came the Delta variant, and now Omicron, and it's beginning to sound like a Greek tragedy. So here to guide us through that playbill, in English, not Greek, are Krista Lawler, arts and entertainment reporter for the Duluth News Tribune, and our own Walt Dizzle, music director and host of the Dean's List on KUWS 91.3, our Wisconsin Public Radio Superior affiliate. Welcome, Krista and Walt.
Hello.
Hi, Robin.
So I asked each of you to come up with your top art stories for the year, and not only did neither of your lists match, they didn't match anything I had either.
Ooh.
Is that because in this confusing year, it was impossible to measure success or for anyone to know what the big thing happening was? Because, like, we didn't have any Elton Johns or Bob Dylans coming to town.
I don't know about Walt, but I did not go in public very much, so I'm still kind of... If it can come to me, it's more likely to land on my list.
So did Elton John visit you?
He did not.
What's wrong with him? How about you, Walt?
Yeah, I rarely left the house. The older I get, the less I want to leave the house, but a pandemic definitely was a good reason to stay at home.
Right.
Yes.
So how did we measure, you know, what was big or what was important, or maybe important and big aren't the same thing anymore?
One of the biggest things that happened in this past year, and something that's going to have like a ripple of, you know, is going to go on and on, is the closing of the Electric Fetus.
For those who may not know or who may be appalled by the name, it's a record store in Duluth.
Yeah, and kind of a gathering place, too, for people. And it closed earlier this year, and I don't know, it seems like there's not that consolidated spot right now. Walt, you're kind of a record guy. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a huge story, and I didn't even think about it because it was so life-changing for me. So what I chose as my favorite stories were basically music and records that came to me, but realizing that there's no place for me to go physically buy a new Charlie Parr or Lowell record, and that's really devastating for the community.
Does Zenith Books carry any records? And one reason I point them out is, of course, they carry a lot of books, but they were going to close, you know? And I said to Bob Dubrow, who runs it, do you mean closing your physical store, or do you mean, you know, closing for good? And since then, I'm not going to take the credit, but they've been doing gangbusters online, and you can order, you know, almost anything from there. So can they get music, and if we still sell CDs or whatever?
It's such a small shop. Yeah.
The place next door to it, the Annex, actually has some local records, and he just started stocking some Sub Pop releases. So there will be places, you know, that have local records, but it's so mismatched. There's not one place where you can go and get everything in one spot. And that's a shame.
All right. Well, then we will pronounce that as a casualty of the pandemic. We're speaking with Krista Lawler, arts and entertainment reporter for the Duluth News Tribune, and Walt Dizzo, music director and host of the Dean's List on KUWS 91.3. We are talking about the top art stories in the region. What about people who've done just amazing stuff online or just released some great material?
Well, I mean, the couple of records that jumped out to me, Low obviously put a new record out to critical acclaim. Hey What is huge. They actually got nominated for a Grammy, first time they got nominated in production. So that album is huge, and they're going to be touring next year. Charlie Parr put a new record out. I'm really fond of Tony Bennett, who put out a record called Fun's Over, which he recorded himself, played all the parts, all the instruments himself. Sounds very lo-fi. He's some of his best songwriting I've ever heard. So,
Tony Bennett, by the way, we're talking about the local Tony Bennett, correct?
Yeah, from the Cars and Trucks, the Dames.
He may not mind the confusion with the other Tony Bennett, but I see on his album he actually uses the name Anthony Bennett. Here's an instrumental selection from Fun's Over, SLSB. And that was SLSB by Anthony Bennett off his album Fun's Over, which made Walt Dizzle's list of top records of the year. We're speaking with Walt and with Krista Lawler about the year in review of arts in our region. Krista, what's on your list of top musical performances for the year?
One of the things I'm excited about is something that's going to be happening in the future is Galen Lee writing the Broadway score for Macbeth. I think that's a huge, huge opportunity. And that was announced in 2021, but of course it won't happen until 2022. Otherwise, I loved Afro Geode this year. Mostly, I only saw her online. So.
And you heard her on the show. I take it back. You and I did have some of the same people on our list. But go on.
I loved Lanou. That's the Sarah Kruger project. It has this warm, wistful sound to it that I really love. I love everything about her. So those are some things that jumped out at me at this point. Yes.
All right. We had Sarah Kruger on too, which means you're either making a plug for the show or you and I actually have the same taste in music. Here's July from Sarah Kruger's Lanou Project. Thank you. July from Sarah Kruger's Lanou Project. We're reviewing arts and entertainment highlights of the year 2021 with Krista Lawler of the Duluth News Tribune and Walt Dizzo of KUWS 91.3, Wisconsin Public Radio in Superior. Those were some of your highlights, but is there a particular act that you, either one of you thinks should have gotten more acclaim or recognition over the last year but didn't?
So I was involved with this project, but Sacred Heart has been doing this thing where they have like a person come in and interview an artist and then they stream them online. And I interviewed Colleen Myrie and it was amazing. First of all, I felt like I had her all to myself, and I have never just sat in a room and just like completely without any sort of distractions around me, sat and listened to her, and man, is she incredible. She's incredible on a stage. Her songs are amazing. The stories that she has to tell are, I mean, she's just fantastic. And, you know, there were six of us there. There's people recording it, and there were, you know, just the tech crew basically was there, maybe a couple stragglers. But it ended up on YouTube, and that's where they've been streaming, but they're also still available. But it was a, it was fantastic to just get to sit there and talk to her and then hear her music. So I don't know how many people saw it. I guess I never doubled back to check the clicks on it, but but I would hope that people would check that out because it's a really cool series that they're doing. Mm-hmm.
You know, Robin, I'll piggyback on that and say I was also a part of that. And I love Colleen Myrie. I've had her on the radio show and she's fantastic. I interviewed Lila Aboukadare, who's a young artist. She was part of a more of a folk group out of UMD, but she struck out on her own with a more punk sound, and she's really blowing up. And I think she's got big things planned. She's also somebody who kind of suffered from the pandemic because she's a great live performer and brings that raw energy. It's hard to really capture on film, but she's awesome. And I think she does a good job of making that happen. And that the whole series at Sacred Heart is fantastic. I really think that those interview shows brought us closer to being in a real life concert when we couldn't be.
Well, and that goes back to not being able to go out or not having many performances to see if you did go out. But we still have our TV screens, and both of you were impressed with some local offerings on our public TV friends at WDSC Channel 8. Krista, are you suddenly an opera fan?
I am, but I'm also a fan of The Iron Opera, a piece created by Mike Schultz and Marius Anderson for WDSE. They spent about 6 months this past summer in Aurora, Minnesota, with Northern Lights Music Festival, and created this piece about the opera they performed this past summer, kind of the making of it. It's delicious.
Mm-hmm. And erstwhile opera fan that I am, are you telling me something I didn't know, that Aurora puts on an opera every year?
Right. So Vita Zupancic is a native of Aurora, who's kind of gone on to international fame as a pianist and loves her hometown. She still has a house there, and she comes home every summer and brings in names from around the country to be in this performance. But then she also adds musicians from the community to play instruments and to be part of the ensembles.
Yeah, I've been a part of this opera for years, and I still run into people. You do an opera? Here?
It's an Italian opera in the middle of Minnesota.
Kind of a show stealer is Stephen Sokola, who's of the one-man band. He's a musician born in Palo, Minnesota. Deep Finnish accent, very deep voice, who is in the ensemble for the opera, but he's also kind of steals the show with his one-man band. And, you know, he's like skateboarding with an accordion and that kind of thing. And it turns out to be a very fun piece, very Mike Schultzian in its in the way it has these like little winks and humor in it. So it's a really cool melding of this huge thing. They kind of talk about high art in small places in the documentary, which is kind of interesting.
Which we can all now see, courtesy of WDSE. Walt, don't touch that dial. You had a favorite on public TV, too.
I did. Being a radio broadcaster myself and really loving radio, I fell in love with a documentary called Who is Rainbow Trout, which tells the story of this guy named Rainbow Trout, who traveled 5 hours round trip to do a old-timey country radio program in Grand Marais at WTIP in Cook County. This is a piece that was produced by Ivy Vineo and her husband, Arnie. Actually, Rainbow Trout is married to Ivy Vineo's grandmother, so that was a really cool connection locally. The film features a bunch of local artists paying tribute to how they discovered his voice on the air, and there's a ton of really great music in the documentary. A lot of local artists covering country legends that you won't hear anywhere else. It's that music is not on CD. You can't find it. You can only hear it in the documentary. I just think it's great.
And who else helped on the production of it?
Oh, the director is a brilliant guy named Daniel Oyenloye, part of the Dan Sand Creatives. I know that he put his special touches on this, and he really connected with the story as being a storyteller, just like Rainbow Trout.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of his finale, because Dan Sand Creatives is now left town, one of the unfortunate things of 2021.
Right. Dan Sands is Daniel and his wife, Sandra, and also their youngster left to the Twin Cities, as you said, this summer. He joined us shortly before leaving, and he shared a tune with us. Blessings, produced with Charles OBJ.
But it is you giving me all the blessings, yeah. blessings and blessings. Showers of blessings, I'm blessing, I'm blessing, I'm blessing, I'm blessing, I'm blessing. When I realize something's been missing, cause nothing's emotionless without you, without you, Yahweh.
And that was Blessings by Daniel Oyinlowe, who left us this year, as did one less guest earlier in the spring, now making residence in California. Making good on their name, I guess, except they're always welcome to be a guest on our show. We will have one of their selections take us out at the end of this segment. We are speaking with Walt Dizzle, music director of KUWS, and Krista Lawler of the Duluth News Tribune, but for a limited time only, I understand.
This is my last week, Robin. I think I've been at the News Tribune for 21 years, about 12 in arts and entertainment features area. But yes, I will be staying in town, though, popping up in the Duluth Bureau of the Star Tribune with my friend Jenna Hollingsworth, who I love with all my heart and soul.
Who also is a former Duluth News Tribune staffer, as is yours truly. We're all longtime colleagues, friends, neighbors, and everything on both sides of the bay. You can't go anywhere. That includes you too, Walt, even if on hiatus for a while.
Coming back soon. Don't worry. I'll be around.
All right. Any other must mentions on both of your lists that we did not get to that people have to know about?
For this last year, nothing that jumped out at me, but I'm really looking forward to Homegrown Music Festival coming back live in person in the flesh this next coming year. I know that they're looking at band registrations now and picking who's going to play, so hopefully something to look forward to on the horizon.
Krista, you want to follow up on that? What are you looking forward to next year?
Glenn Sheen, the musical, playing at the North Shore. I think that's going to be amazing.
Glenn Sheen, the musical. You got to elaborate on that.
Oh, Jan Pauling and Jeffrey Hatcher created Glenn Sheen, the musical. It's the story of the story we don't talk about Glenn Sheen. And it's going to be playing right down the street at the North Shore Theater.
Right.
I think it was originally done for the History Museum in Twin Cities. So.
Okay. Well, we've been speaking to Krista Lawler up until this week, the arts and entertainment reporter for the Duluth News Tribune, and Walt Dizzle, music director and host of The Dean's List on KUWS 91.3, Wisconsin Public Radio's Superior Affiliate. Thank you both for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Robin.
And as promised, here's one last guest with one last recording of a few cover songs made in Duluth before they headed out to California last spring. We'll be back after this.
I waited till I saw the sun. Don't know why I didn't come. Left you by the house of fun. Don't know why I didn't come. I don't know why I didn't come. When I saw the break of day, wish that I could fly away.
And that's just about it for this edition of Simply Superior. We'll be off the next 2 weeks to bring you WPR Network programming for Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve during our normal time slots on this station. We'll be back to start the new year off fresh on January 7th. Our theme song was written and performed by Bruce Nelson of South Range. The executive producers for Simply Superior are Paul Danberg and Ezra Wall, with help from Rick Ryer. Don Jewell takes care of our webpage and much-needed administrative support. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with a look toward brighter days with the selection from Annie, playing at the North Shore Theater in Duluth through this Sunday, December 19th. Tickets are still available at duluthplayhouse.org. Here are the production's two Annies, Cadence Graber and Sophia Salmela. Have a wonderful holiday season and stay safe, everyone.